March 6th to December 10th. Not a bad season, fellas. Let's review. Part 1, Road Warriors.
It was a good preseason. Orlando is a nice facility down there where the fields are right next to the hotel, and it allows us to obviously take in the sun, but get down to work for our first game against New York Red Bulls next weekend. Did we make mistakes? Yeah, you could say that Defoe, in some ways, we misread his entire situation with his mother and perhaps maybe his desire to be in Toronto. But there's no way we get Sebastian Giovinco without Jermaine Defoe. I never want to be in a position again where we have to rely entirely on a designated player model to get us to where we need to go. The environment in BMO Field has always been one of the best in the league, especially when the fans fill up the place and they hold up their scarves, the national anthem. One of the things I'm excited about is the tifo that our supporters will be able to hang. So once you add in the roof, you know it's going to trap more of the sound. I know the players talk about it every day. That first week of May is going to be a special time for the club.
The GM, Tim Bezbatchenko, on TFC Pitchside, the first ever edition of TFC Pitchside, way back early in the season as the Reds were about to embark on their 8-game road trip to start the 2016 season. Dan Riccio, Thomas Mitchell-Akos. What we're doing today, Thomas?
Spell it out to the listeners.
It's a special, or as we would say in Italian, troppo speciale. Very special.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. Troppo Speciale, it is called Road Warriors. This is part one of three in a season in review of Toronto FC in 2016. Obviously, the best ever season for this club.
Not hard to be the best season, right?
No, I wouldn't say that it was all that difficult to do. But it is the best ever season for this club, and it started, again, as there was renovations to BMO Field. It started on the road. And you can go back, listen to all our episodes at sportsnet.ca/590. Find the TFC Pitchside show page, and you'll be able to find them all there. So what we're going to do, we're going to go through the first 8-game road trip here today. And it all started on Sunday, March 6th, at the New York Red Bull. Many people thought it might be a loss. Instead, as they seem to do often on season openers and home openers, they pulled off the big dub.
Coming back the other way, Giovinco lays it off. Delgado moving ahead, trying to put the game away, and he scores! Marky Delgado! As stoppage time begins, has given Toronto what seems an insurmountable lead now on this opening day.
Tell you what, I keep saying it, Steve. This sport is the craziest sport in the world because it's inevitable. If you're Red Bull, you're pressing everything forward. One ball squirts out to Giovinco, and how good is he? He knows exactly what to do.
Yeah, Marky Delgado, his first of only a couple goals on the season, but it was nonetheless the one that sealed the deal for TFC. This was shortly after Tsubasa Endo, rookie of the team, first-round pick. We had no idea what to expect from this guy. He wasn't even, whatever the mock drafts mean on MLSsoccer.com, he wasn't even near the top.
Absolutely nothing. That's what they mean.
And TFC selected him in the first round. He wasn't even expected to go anywhere near the first round. He ends up starting in week one for the Reds, with Jozy Altidore again out with an hamstring injury. And so Endo wins the penalty that gets TFC out in front. Sebastian Giovinco gets on his motorcycle and vroom, vroom, vroom. And TFC off to the races at Red Bull Arena after Marky Delgado gets the other goal. The starting 11 for TFC on day one of the season, Thomas. I wish I would have turned away my computer screen so you wouldn't be able to see it. But I would have asked you to, like,
Don't worry. I'm not looking.
Clint Irwin, Drew Moore, Damien Perquis, obviously Justin Morrow and Stephen Betashor, Jonathan Osorio, Michael Bradley, Will Johnson, and then up top, Danny Lovitz, Sebastian Giovinco, and Tsubasa Endo.
Danny Lovitz.
Danny Lovitz, who may not even be with TFC next year.
We don't know.
Most likely won't be with TFC next year. So there was your starting 11 for the first game of the season, and it kind of, it was TFC's first ever win at Red Bull Arena, and it kind of set TFC off into another kind of hype machine a little bit to get the season started, because they got another big win on opening day.
Yeah, and generally speaking, when you're looking down at the seasons after seasons with TFC, there's not much to look forward to even after the first game. So right. Getting off with a victory, anything's possible.
Here's what Greg Vanney had to say after the win against the Red Bull.
Gritty. I think we dug deep. Not everything was perfect, and nor is it on day one. But the guys competed. They competed for 90 minutes. They covered each other. They scrapped things out. Made plays when they need to make plays defensively. And we're starting 8 games on the road, and we talked about is give ourselves a chance to win games, right? And a lot of that for today was some good, strong, hard defensive work, and we did that. And in the end, we gave ourselves a chance to win, and we did. So I'm very proud of them. It's a first game of the season, so building blocks are in place, but it's about a culture of winning. And for us, we came on the road and won in a very difficult place, the first time we've ever won in New York. So in terms of developing confidence for this group, and we have 7 more on the road, so one at a time. However we get results, we get results. That's all that matters.
Move on to the next one. On to the next one. And that would be Drew Moore.
Yeah, I thought we were extremely gritty. Very tough to play against. And again, you start 8 games on the road, you're going to have to do that. It's just one game. It's a shutout against a very good, the defending Supporters Shield champs. But we have to carry performances like this, in the next 7 games on the road and stay tight like that. And it's just the camaraderie, the energy in this locker room right now is great. And it's been like this for 6-7 weeks. I said it from about the second or third day in preseason. The energy that these guys, are showing right now is translating over onto the game field.
And we saw that fight and that battle throughout the season for TFC. And Drew Moore was a big part of that. Ends up with over 3,000 minutes on the center of defense. And you look back at the signings, Thomas, as this team made. Clint Irwin, Drew Moore probably had the biggest impact on this team over anyone else.
Most definitely. And after that first game, popping up a clean sheet like that, I mean, only positives moving forward.
Now, one other thing that I thought was really cool that we did early on in the season, and our first one was before the season opener against the New York Red Bull. I shouldn't say myself, because I was always in the station, it seemed, during those times. But producer Emil Delich and good friend of the show, Marco D'Onofrio, went out to some of you guys and the supporter groups and checked out what you guys were doing to set up the season during this road warrior type of stretch at the beginning of the year. And we started prior to the New York Red Bull game with the inebriati.
Properly say the supporters club.
It's inebriati or inebriati for the Manja Cakes.
For the Manja Cakes. How did you guys come up with the name? Where did it come from?
We're a bunch of drunk idiots to begin with. So when we started up in 2013, there were about 12 of us, and what I always say is that first year we really punched over our weight class in terms of our size and our output of TIFOs and just sort of product in the stands. And so when we were deciding on a full name, that first year was a bit of a test run. We were in Section 111, so we called ourselves SG111, but we decided we needed something that stood out a little bit more, and we had a little bit of brainstorming going on, and one of our members, Giles, came up with the idea for the name of Inebriati, and we thought it fit very well considering how much we had pulled off and based on our small size, and so it fit really well. And actually, a couple of weeks later, we came across this Mitchell and Webb sketch. Mitchell and Webb are a sketch comedy team out of England, and they did a sketch called The Inebriati about a shadowy group of Illuminati type that run the world, but they're always just short of 2 drinks drunk. And so we added the second T to represent that we finished that second drink.
So it formed in 2003, like you had mentioned.
Oh, 2013.
2013, sorry. Like you had mentioned, which is relatively recent compared to some of the groups who have been around since day one. What possessed you to form your own group and your own supporters club?
Well, when we formed, there was the atmosphere at BMO Field had sort of taken a little bit of a nosedive. And that's to be expected when the team has the record that it had had, right? And we had been putting up with essentially 8 years of just losing and of heartbreak. That length of time of futility will always lead to infighting and to politics sort of popping up. And, you know, some people have a different mentality than us. So a lot of people couldn't bring themselves to sing and to go crazy for 90 minutes when the team was that bad and when the front office and management and ownership was really sort of dropping the ball every opportunity they had. And so I was in one group. I was in U Sector, which actually they formed they used to support the Toronto Lynx at Varsity Stadium. So they've been around for a long time and they do some awesome stuff. And the rest of the guys were in Red Patch Boys, and some of our current members as well were part of North End Elite, which had folded the year before. So we decided to get together and create a new group based on our shared mentality of, you know, 90 minutes, flags up, voices up, going crazy, you know, bring the energy, bring the atmosphere. Really, really sort of trying to promote an ultra mentality in the stands. So we had all found each other through the various groups and our activities supporting the team over the 8 years leading up to that. And it just sort of fell into place. We had all left our other groups and we found a home in 111 and a home with each other. And that's really what drew me to it. It was the fact that we created a family for ourselves.
You had said that, you know, you guys formed in 2013, you know, amid of despair of losing and a plethora of it. What's been the biggest change now that the team is actually good and a lot of pundits are predicting them to go all the way to win the MLS Cup? I mean, have you noticed a difference in the atmosphere at BMO Field over the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, last year, it started in 2014 with the signing of Defoe. When you bring over a big name like that, it's always going to bring people. It's going to bring people who are interested and people who have been staying away because they didn't see the team as having value or having a chance and a hope in hell of making the playoffs. So it's brought people and it's brought people from all different sort of mentalities. So it's been really good for filling up the stadium and starting to bring the atmosphere back. Last year was just absolutely wonderful. It was from the first home game right through. There was energy and there was excitement. So it's made sort of our lives a little bit easier in terms of what we do in the stands because there's more people that want to feed off that energy and want to help create that energy. So it makes our, what we do easier to facilitate.
Last year we saw the construction of a phase one at BMO Field. This year we'll see phase two. What are you guys most excited about this season? I mean, what do you guys have planned in terms of TIFO now that you'll have the canopies to utilize if needed?
That's probably the only thing that we're happy about. we led the No Argos at BMO Field campaign last year and the years before it as well. So the destruction of BMO Field is really something that bothers us. Having the roof and having a pulley system that the front office is setting up for us is going to be awesome because that'll allow us to do big TIFOs that you see in Europe, that you see in Greece, you see in Germany and throughout Italy even. So it's we're really excited about that because I mean, if we had a middle name, it would be TIFO, because that's really what we love to do. We love to get together and have a couple beers and paint together and come up with crazy things. So that'll be fun, and that opens up a whole new dynamic in terms of creating and displaying TIFOs.
So has the club reached out to you guys about potentially coordinating some big TIFOs, and what's the plan going forward for the season?
Not yet. The club doesn't even know what's going to happen because same thing as last year, nobody was able to get into BMO Field until the home opener. So the club doesn't quite know how it's going to work. We don't quite know how it's going to work. It's going to take a couple of games in order to get it rigged up and test it out and see what works and what doesn't work. The club's really good. And I have to sort of go back to my first comment about how the FO and management really had dropped the ball every chance they got. They've learned and they're really good at facilitating things for the supporters now. They're really on the ball. They want us to do our work. They want to help us. And so basically, in terms of TIFOs now, we just sort of do them and we let the club know what we need, which is a 180 degree change, and it's really nice. It's really nice to know that the club wants to be our partners in this.
Now, it's no secret that Toronto FC supporters groups have had their privileges revoked on the road for the first four home games, but you guys are the only ones facing sanctions for that home opener at BMO Field. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? And just quickly comment, I mean, do you find it justified? Is it fair? And what really happened in Montreal?
Yes, it's justified. We went to Montreal. we broke rules. We knew we were breaking rules. And so we were punished, and we take our slap on the wrist and we move on and we continue to support the team and we continue to bring our passion and energy. It's what we do sort of calls for a little bit of line walking, and once in a while you gotta dip your toes over the line. It's part of bringing the energy, it's part of bringing the excitement, and it's part of our role as supporters to sort of keep the club on its toes. And that also is, I mean, in this instance, it's not keeping the club accountable, but it's also to be able, it's part of our ability to flex our muscle and to keep the club accountable to the supporters and to the fans and to the players. So I think that what we got, the two games that where our privileges are revoked, is fair. You know, we're not incredulous about it, because it's as if we went, you know, we went into somebody's house and we smacked them in the face. We're not surprised that we're getting smacked back, right? So no regrets. I don't expect to see that again, at least for a very long time, because it's not necessary at this point. But when it is, we'll consider our options and we'll look at the situation. We sort of deal with it situation by situation. What I'm concerned about is the fact that the club is handing down these sanctions. From what I understand, the clubs now are being pressured, not forced, but pressured by the league's management, by the head of security for the league, a gentleman named Ray Whitworth, who was head of security at Arsenal, gained infamy by chasing down a guy in a Peperami outfit at an Arsenal training session. He went on to lead security for EPL and for the England national team. And he's got, from what I understand, a master plan laid out, in my opinion, to neuter support and to make it like the empty crates. Sorry, I'm a Spurs fan, so I call it that anyways. But it concerns me that the league is now having the clubs do its dirty work for it. In my opinion, if the league wants us sanctioned, the league should sanction us. They shouldn't force the club to sanction us. I wouldn't want to be in the new president, Bill Manning's, shoes, to have to come in and his first act as the new president of TFC is to sanction his own fans. That's not a pleasant way to start off your relationship. He's been very open with us, and he's been very forward with us, so we know where he's at and he knows where we're at, so it doesn't change our relationship with him and it doesn't make us bitter or sour. It's just the way things have to be. And as I said, we take our time out and we move on. It's no big deal.
Really, it sounds like the game's about to kick off, and I don't want to keep you waiting. So thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing you at BMO Field throughout the season.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Everybody's welcome on 114 from any walk of life. As long as you're a lunatic and you want to go crazy for 90 minutes, we want to see everybody out there, hands up, scarves up, and losing their voices every week, because everything that we do for the team, and this is going to be a good year, so we want the whole city to get behind the team.
On to the next one, and that is Sunday, March 13th at Yankee Stadium. Will Johnson sets this one up for you.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, obviously they got a new coach, they got some new pieces. I think they're probably still figuring out how they look best and how they set up, as are we. So I think it'll be a good game and another good tactical battle, but I think we'll have a good chance to do what we want to do.
And boy, was Will Johnson right. I mean, you look back to that game and the way that New York City FC set up their team, it was like this weird box formation in the middle of the park, if you guys remember that. Very, very odd, and part of the reason why team got off poorly in the game, because it just kind of threw them for a loop on how New York was going to play. But we'll get to that in just a second. Also, at this very same training session that you hear this Will Johnson, we spoke to Jonathan Osorio one-on-one, aside from the scrums at training, and it's Marco D'Onofrio once again taking you away one-on-one with Jonathan Osorio.
Anybody who's watched you over the last couple of years can see how much your game has improved, especially this year. What's next for you? What's the next level and what's the next step?
Obviously, it's playing a bigger role on this team and helping carry this team to an MLS Cup. I think that's now it's time to start winning trophies and also providing more, obviously, offensively. Just playing a bigger role all around.
We saw Mo Babouli get a first-team contract this year. I mean, you were one of the first to kind of pave the way from that TFC 2 up into the first team. I mean, do you feel like you've helped through the academy system, and that you've kind of shown what the system can produce?
Through, yeah, I guess you can say that. And it's nice. The first one was Daniil, so it was nice. You know, he's the one that kind of broke through and made other kids believe that, you know, it's definitely possible to make the first team if you work hard and everything. And I think this is great that Mo got signed as the first one from the TFC2. It shows that, you know, that this team was made in order to produce products, and Mo is an example of that. So now it'll only attract more players and make more players hungrier to train and make it.
I mean, you spent some time in South America to develop your game. I mean, do you think that's no longer the case? I mean, at the time it was probably necessary, but do you feel like that's no longer the case with the system that's been developed and now with the creation of TFC2?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's not necessary for kids to go overseas and to get in professional academies, because we have a really good academy here. You know, it's only different here just because, you know, there's one team in Ontario and only three in Canada. In that case, so obviously, you know, you're going to have, not every kid can be on the team, and some kids will have to go overseas. But yeah, I agree that the first thought should be to come here and make it through the academy here.
Looking ahead to Sunday's game, you guys got New York City FC at Yankee Stadium. I mean, you've played at the stadium before now. How does it differ from other stadiums, especially how much narrow? I mean, it's been described as a bowling alley by some. So how does it change your game?
It changes a lot. The game becomes faster, obviously. You don't have a lot of time on the ball. You know, there's lots of transition, and it's a lot different just because of the smaller field, and you know, the pitch isn't the greatest pitch in the whole world. You know, it's no excuse. It's no excuse for us, no excuse for them. We're all playing on the same pitch. So as long as we stick to our game plan and play the way we did last week, I'm sure we'll have a good result.
When everybody thinks of NYCFC, they obviously think of their three big stars with the Pirlo, the Lampard, and the David Villa. I mean, does it affect the way you approach the game and you guys go into it at all?
No, I think, you know, every team has their stars or their DPs. These guys have obviously really big guys, but no, it doesn't change nothing. You know, we have our game plan. We know what to do against them, and it doesn't matter if it's Pirlo or Villa or the Screw. It doesn't matter. We're going to play the same way against them.
Second season in a row now that you guys are starting off with a lengthy road trip. What did you learn from last year, and what can you learn from this year from that experience?
I think we learned a lot, actually. You know, we got 9 points last year. We're aiming to get a little bit more than that this year. You know, last year we won the first game. We started off well, and we kind of went on a slide. We know that. So I think this year we want to keep staying strong. You know, we beat the Red Bulls away from home, and any team can beat any team. So we know we have a chance to win any game we go into. So we're going to hope that, you know, we don't have a slide this year.
Before we let you go, one of the highlights of last season was probably that video of you dancing with the fans after the game in October with the Inebriati. Do you remember it? Have you seen the video?
Yeah, I lived it. I've seen it. It was a great moment. You know, nothing planned or anything, just, you know, it was in the heat of the moment. It was a great, great moment for the club, but more importantly for the fans. So, you know, I'm a big soccer fan. I think, not to say I'd be a hooligan or anything if I wasn't a footballer, but I'm very passionate about football.
And the reason I asked you about that song particularly and that video particularly is because, and I'm actually going to pull this up on my phone, because I don't know if you've seen the video of Gonzalo Higuain with Napoli, and he's actually dancing to the same song with their fans. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on his dance moves and critique what he was pulling off. Let me just pull it up on YouTube. So they're actually singing the Italian version, the same song that the fans. Now, he's got the overhand clapping motion going. I don't remember. Do you remember what you did?
No.
You had, like, the underhand going.
Oh, yeah.
So, quickly, just what's going on in your head when you're doing something like that with the fans and the ultras? And I mean, it must be just taking over, like, an outer body experience.
Yeah, it's just adrenaline. It's the joy. It's the kid in you. In South America, there's, a tradition. Even they do it in Europe, too. There's certain chants that where a whole section starts jumping up and down, and it's kind of synchronized, and it looks so good. TFC does it too. They do it here too, and I think that's the basic dance, the jumping up and down, and then moving your arms and everything. That's just whatever that just comes to you in the moment. You know what I mean? So.
And how important is that? That the supporters groups have brought that culture here, and I mean, do you guys see it on the pitch? Do you hear it on the pitch? How much of a difference does that make for you guys?
Yeah, of course we hear it. And, you know, as much as, you know, we're concentrating the game, obviously, and everything, and sometimes, noise can be blocked out, but at the same time, it isn't, because even away players, you know, the visiting team, you hear it. You hear the, you can feel the feeling in the stands from their chants. And the louder the chants, the more you know you're under pressure. When it's quiet, you know you're dominating the game. So believe it or not, the fans are definitely, it's cliche to say it, but they're 12th men.
No, and Jonathan, thank you very much for taking the time to join us, and good luck on Sunday.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
And David Villa, who's become one of the main players that just kills TFC on an annual basis, Thomas, he did it again against TFC this time. A PK to start it off, and then 4 minutes later, handball in the box, the hand of David Villa coming down and making it 2-0.
Villa's delivery! Amaro at full stretch. Got it half clear. Still a lovely ball!
Watch the second ball. Great ball in from Pirlo. Toronto deals with it, but now you have to deal with the second ball.
But TFC weren't done there. And I remember we looked back at this game, and I remember doing the show after it, and a turning point came when Michael Bradley and Greg Vanney kind of convened on the sideline after they went down 2-0, and there was like, hey, this is what we need to change here. And I think that kind of set a tone. Not just then, but throughout the year, we saw those little in-game tactical moves that Greg Vanney would make. And quite frankly, Michael Bradley would kind of be the coach on the field to help it happen.
He'd relay his messages on to the players. And it was the first time we saw Greg do that season, this season, obviously. And it was an ongoing thing, and that's why I looked at him to be manager of the year. He should have been.
Yeah, maybe, and was not even nominated. Damien Perquis got it to 2-1, and then it was a beauty goal from the Atomic Ant to tie it up.
Now you're getting Will Johnson in the final third, having a little bit more freedom, and numbers going forward for Toronto.
Vinko! Well, you give him any sort of space at your peril. Jovinko making NYC pay the price.
15 MLS MVP to turn you and run at you one-on-one. Jovinko finding that seam, turning, running at that back line in New York City. No doubt about it.
So 2-2, TFC get through their first two games with 4 points. On to the third game, and it's at Children's Mercy Park. We start off with the starting 11 for this game.
Michael Bradley and his beautiful ball on the head, cleaning up everything in a much more deep-lying midfield position. See how that goes.
Ah, Fox with a lovely intro for the game. Yes, Michael Bradley and his beautiful bald head. Whatever that means, TFC taking on Sporting Kansas City, and it's another hard-battled road game. And they get maybe their first of a few screw jobs on the season.
I mean, it's not really what Damien Perquis does. That's not his forte.
Greg Vanney was
a mistake there by Williams. Dwyer hit too far for Davis. Davis wins it cleanly on Morrow. No foul. Brad Davis looking for space and he scores. Brad Davis, first goal for Sporting KC after years of scoring against him, puts him in front against Toronto.
Going to be some screaming and yelling about this. Brad Davis, was that a foul or not? Well, doesn't really matter.
You remember that? Justin Morrow getting the foul. At least everybody and their mothers thought it was a foul, except for Sporting Kansas City, who went on to score the goal. Brad Davis winning it. 1-0. TFC get their first loss of the season. They move through to Dick's Sporting Goods Park. And things continued to snowball in the opposite direction for TFC, Thomas. This time, the first of a few meetings with referee Ishmael Elfath, where he gives Benoit Cheru a yellow in the 10th minute and then a second yellow in the 13th.
And basically the entire MLS season, as we have another collision here and another caution coming the way of Toronto FC.
And that is a red. Cheru has gone this time a second yellow, and Bobby Burling looks like he's out cold.
Take a look. Can't see. You see Cheru going up, you see Bobby Burling going up, you can't see from this angle. Let's take a look. He's watching the ball. You saw what he tried to do right there. He even tried to bounce a little bit, try to push Axel a little bit. It's just, it's not possible.
Soljak onside, and there is the opening goal! And the opening goal for Luis Soljak! It's been more than a year since he last scored in competitive soccer, and that was in Argentina, his first goal in Major League Soccer. And it's the first one of the night.
And there you have it. The red card, which was, I think you at the time kind of defended Elfath a little bit. The elbow coming up from Shea Rue.
Yeah, I did a little bit. And I have to say, as we sit here and we talk about, you know, screw jobs by the referees, but look, every review show of every team in this league, they could sit there and talk about screw jobs. Everyone was on the receiving end.
Luis Soljak scored the goal. He was later traded to Chicago. Prior to this game, we spoke to Drew Moore one-on-one about his return.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of emotions. I think for the most part, excitement. You know, when I think of Colorado, I still think it's home right now. You know, I'm sure it'll feel like it when I'm there. It wasn't long ago that it still was home. So I think when you're at a place for so long and with an organization that treated me so well and looked after me and, you know, a place that my wife and I love so much, it's difficult to go back and kind of be the enemy. Although, you know, I'm expecting a relatively warm reception, but at the same time, it's, you know, for 90 minutes, you know, I'm on the other side of it, and I certainly want to take all 3 points away from them. They've got some, you know, some very good signings that they brought in. You've got Marco Papa, Gashi, the new DP. You know, I think Azira is a very good player. They got stronger, in my opinion, and, you know, they've got a couple guys that they've signed that aren't able to play yet. So, you know, I think they're still very similar. They're gonna grind through every 90 minutes. They're going to be very organized defensively. They're going to be solid. They're not going to give anything away, and they're going to look to take advantage of any opportunities that they may create. But they're always difficult at home. It's, you know, it's a place that they want to make a fortress and make points, you know, difficult to come by there. And so we're going to have to be on our game and play with confidence and play our game. I think we're going at a good time. In the summer, it can get hot. That dry air, it zaps your energy very quickly. You know, I know at least they used to try to play on a bigger field, try to make the field as big as possible, make the opponents run, and, you know, get some of that air out of them early. But, you know, my last couple of years there, it wasn't the fortress we wanted it to be, but I still think teams find it difficult to go in there. And again, when they're organized and when they're on their game, they're tough to break down at home.
Playing there for so many years and having the altitude to your advantage, did you see opponents kind of break down throughout the game? Did you see them kind of getting weaker and weaker and you having that advantage with the altitude?
It's funny. When you're there, you don't think about the altitude very much. You certainly want to use it to your advantage if opponents come in and are worried about it. I know there were some teams that used to talk about it. They just hated it. And I remember being an opponent when I played for Dallas going into Colorado and didn't think much of it. The air is dry. You know, you get a little bit of a dry throat late in the game. But in terms of, you know, I don't think it breaks your body down or beats you up any more than, you know, it's a 90-minute game regardless. And you're going to put your body through it, you know, no matter what altitude you're at. So we always try to use it to our advantage, but I don't think it affects teams as much as you would like.
Your former coach had a pretty solid defensive structure with you guys. Do you guys plan on pushing a little bit? And did you have any intel for your team when it comes to a match like this, being there for so many years?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I was teammates with Pablo for about five seasons, and then he was my coach for a couple seasons. So, you know, in video sessions, when we would go over how they are going to be tactically, I tried to, you know, put some of my wisdom in. Obviously, they've got some new players this year, but, again, they're organized defensively. They have a very solid block of six with the back four and the two defensive midfielders, and they're difficult to break down. You have to make them uncomfortable. You have to get them out of their positions. You know, if you can take their outside backs on one-on-one, because sometimes they end up a little bit isolated out there. You know, they want to keep their big guys in the box for any crosses and stuff. But, yeah, you know, any wisdom I was able to, you know, to share with the guys, I certainly tried to this week, and hopefully it'll help us.
Did you guys get any free swag from Dick's Sporting Goods all those years being called Dick's Sporting Goods Arena?
I think we got the normal swag that most MLS teams got. Yeah.
There was a point last year we talked about the mustache and how the mustache was put on because you guys went through a really bad stretch. But really, was it more of an intimidation tactic for other coaches when he shook hands with them?
You'll have to ask Pablo that. He certainly, you know, I think he looked at himself in the mirror one day and saw the mustache on his face and thought, "What am I doing? What am I doing?" No, but it was it was fun for a little bit there. And, you know, I don't think he's ever going to live that one down.
It looks good. It looks really good. And just lastly, being there for so many years, your first season there, winning the MLS Cup, your best memories from Colorado besides the MLS Cup, what can you recall?
Yeah, it's just a beautiful place to live, I feel like. Certainly the championship at the start of my career there was unbelievable, and it put just a silver lining on anything that ever happened there, which was all positive from my end, but it's a great place to live. The quality of life is wonderful. Again, it still feels like it's home to me, and hopefully it will this weekend, and I'm looking forward to spending a couple of days there. But again, for 90 minutes, it's a business trip, and I won all 3 points.
That takes us to New England, Gillette Stadium, the scene of the next game, riding a two-game losing streak. It's now game number 5 on the season. And against the New England Revolution, who, coming into the year, you looked at their squad, they seemed like a pretty good one, and you figured this is probably going to be a team that factors in MLS Cup playoffs. And the way the game started, sure, Kellen Rowe scores in the 14th minute. TFC have always kind of had a little bit of trouble at Gillette Stadium. But once again, even though TFC not playing great on the road, they find a way to get the equalizer. This time, again, it's the Atomic Ant, Sebastian Giovinco.
Wynn turns, buys himself a little more time. Bunbury back to goal, goes down. Referee nonplussed. Boos ringing around Gillette Stadium.
Drew Moore.
Meanwhile, at the other end, here comes Jozy Altidore. Altidore looking for Giovinco. It's in the back of the net. And Giovinco has equalised. 13 minutes into the second half, it was Altidore for Giovinco. They wanted a penalty at the other end, but the Reds are level. And Giovinco has his third goal of the season. It's 1-1.
And that goal came with much consternation, as there seemed to be a foul at some point in the play. So the referees, as you just mentioned, Thomas, coming back to help TFC on that goal at least. And it was Jozy Altidore's first start of 2016. He got the assist on that goal as TFC kind of moved into their 4-4-2 diamond formation for this game with Altidore back. But after this game, we had a chat with Paul Mariner, if you do remember, the former TFC coach and general manager. And Mariner was at a time when things were not great with the refereeing, and there was
a lot of
talk with the refereeing, not just from the TFC games that we've mentioned, but there was a lot of red cards being handed out. And there was Peter Walton of the pro referee organization. We kind of asked Paul Mariner about how the refereeing was going at that time, because early in the season, this was the big talking point around Major League Soccer.
What's concerning to me is when I look at this, and yes, I do agree that referees have one split second to make the decision, is how fast they react once the infraction happens.
Yep.
And I think that's the problem, not talking to their linesmen, not pushing the players away.
Yep.
Do you think that's the, like, how do you teach that? How do you teach, like, that football IQ, knowing and sitting and like, listening to the decision, like, contemplating it?
Well, most of us, you know, we talk to count to 10, but it's that's a little bit too long in football terms to count to 10. But I think if you just have a little breath, and if they are wired up, and I'm assuming they are wired up, and I'm assuming that everything's working, why can't they just say, you know, yellow or red? I mean, it's pretty quick that I can say to you, straight red or definite red. I'm sure they can get that over to them. If you look at what happened on Saturday, if you just cast your mind back to the game,
yeah.
Colfe was absolutely hammered on the halfway line. I thought that was going to be a red card. The referee, if you watch what the referee did, he hesitated to look of the situation, so he was just behind the play, and he waved Playon, which, okay, it's fine, but he was so far behind the play that I definitely thought in commentary, I said that Drew Moore brought Bunbury down in the box. Some people disagree, but it doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree. I mean, that's football.
Yeah.
But then what compounded everything was that Toronto went up the other end, ball over the top. So Altidore squares it to Giovinco. Giovinco deflection, back of the net. So there's so many things to discuss. And we were saying in the truck after the game, the TV truck, that's absolute gold for us, because everybody in the pub is talking about it. We're still talking about it today. It's almost a week ago now. So these instances, these incidents, are absolutely key talking points, key moments in football matches that either get you 3 points or get you 1 point or get you no points. So it's difficult, but Peter is trying to work with the referees every... He has meetings regularly with them. He talks to them all the time. So he's trying to give them pointers, but it's easier said than done. When you cross that white line, it's just like the players. When you cross that white line, it's things happen.
And at that point in the season, Thomas, as we come off that clip from Paul Mariner, 8 red cards more in 2016 than in that point in the season in 2015. So it was the talk around the league. There was red card after red card, and it seemed like the league was really trying to take away the physicality of the game almost.
I think they were just lost in their own rules and trying to make the game progress, yet they didn't have, and I still say this to this day, I don't think they have the right, I mean, they have the licenses, but I don't think they have the right people in there making decisions, because it was a joke. Everything was uneasy. Everyone was talking about the refs and the problems and this and that. And it wasn't even the amount of cards. It was the timing of the cards and the results after the cards.
And as we saw after all of this uproar from many about the refereeing and how the red cards were flowing through, they started to keep the cards in their pockets, and by MLS final, Sebastian Giovinco's getting his butt kicked by the Seattle defenders.
You think it was because of all those Bush League ref calls that everyone was calling
it
them?
It may well have been. Paul Mariner, get it again at our TFC Pitchside page on sportsnet.ca/590. That's where you can find all of our shows from the entire season. I think they kind of get booted on the iTunes page, so if you want to get all of them, you got to go to sportsnet.ca/590.
Relive again, those great games.
Go through the shows tab, find TFC Pitchside, and you'll be able to find all of our episodes there. So, that leaves us with another draw. TFC now on 5 points through 5 games. And people, really at this point, talking a lot about the defense, because TFC had not given up. Aside from the Yankee game or the New York City FC game, they hadn't given up more than one goal in any of these games. And that was huge for them.
And even still, 5 points for 5 games, you figure that, you know.
It set a tone. Greg Vanney set a tone for the rest of the season with the way this team was playing defensively. Set a defensive foundation with the team that he was never able to do in the 2015 year, where they were joint worst in the league.
No TFC manager was ever able to do that.
This is fair. That's a fair point, fair comment. Saturday 16th, RFK Stadium, the scene of TFC's second win on the season.
Shore up the defense. You think about last year at this time, they conceded 11 goals in 5 games. This is out the door and sneaking through, and a chance into the net. And guess who? Sebastian Giovinco. And just like that, Toronto is open.
Fastest goal in TFC history, assisted by Marky Delgado and Jozy Altidore. As you're seeing a theme here, Sebastian Giovinco, basically the only player who could score goals for TFC at this point in the season. He had all of them but one at that point. And hey, it doesn't matter how you get it, but TFC did get the 3 points. After the game, we had Stephen Betashore on to talk about the DCU match, and it was a very interesting moment in the match because he laid an absolute perfect body check on, I think it was, Patrick Nyarko.
What a game, what a win. It was a big defensive performance, but I got to ask you, have you been watching a lot of Stanley Cup playoffs? Like, that was a nice, clean body check you had on Patrick Nyarko.
I was inspired by the playoffs. That's exactly it. The NHL playoffs really got me inspired to get someone with a body check. No, it wasn't. It was just one of those things. I'm just trying to protect the ball and protecting him from getting the ball. So I just had to do what I had to do, and unfortunately he got the worst of it from the boards. But yeah, I guess you guys like that. But what is that, a board check? Is that what you
was
call
that? That was a solid shoulder-to-shoulder check. You won over a lot of Leaf.
No, you might have got 2 minutes for boarding, though.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe, but a lot boarding. Of Leaf a lot of Leaf fans who are not going to be without playoff hockey for a while are jumping on board right now after that hit.
Perfect. That's, I'll take.
That's the way it should be. Hey, look, this defense is something that has never really been seen before for TFC fans over the history of this franchise. you guys have really, a lot of new faces in here, but you've all really gelled quickly together.
Yeah, it's a little surprising. Everyone keeps saying they're so shocked by it. I mean, you look at the type of players that they brought in, you know, with Drew and Clint, Will, myself. You know, the past 2 years, I'm used to being on a team where we don't give up many goals. You know, I think 13 shutouts the last 2 years in a row, and one of the lowest, maybe one or two, as far as goals against average. So I'm used to this. I take pride in defending, and I know the guys next to me, like Drew, Damian, Josh, Justin, and the two guys in front of us, we all take a lot of pride in defending and not giving up goals. So this was a perfect case of it. Just get down to the nitty-gritty and fight and battle and try to get the clean sheet.
And there is Betashore talking about how the team is progressing defensively. And as you can see, through these first six games, TFC, with all these points, they've only allowed 5 goals. That's something that they never would have thought could happen coming into the year.
Well, the crazy part about this is, look at how the defensive line evolved, because who was playing at that point?
And it was mostly Perkey, Moore,
exactly,
Moro, Betashore.
And how it evolved, and how, yes, okay, they were allowing goals, but it wasn't the way they used to. They were playing better. They were playing as a, there was a system in place, and that system changed again later on in the year.
Yeah, it was defense first at this point in the year. Following that, Commissioner Darren Garber made a trip to Sacramento, one of the prospective MLS expansion cities, and expansion is obviously going to continue this year, but at that point, it was still about getting to Atlanta and Minnesota and still looking for further cities to go to. We had Stephen Goff on MLS expansion and teams possibly folding.
Now, when you're looking at Minnesota, St. Louis, Orlando City, the problem that I don't want to see is what happened early on was teams folding. Because after 5 years, the demand is gone. The rush is gone. It's not new anymore. Can these teams still hold firm?
I mean, certainly that's a fair question in with any team in any sport in any league. I mean, whoever thought Salt Lake City would be a strong MLS soccer market? It now is. You know, there's no doubt about that. They're strong. Columbus has been around from the beginning. It's certainly not one of the strongest clubs in MLS, but it has sustained for 21 years. So that's been good. Other places, Houston became a team when San Jose moved. Houston built a new stadium. They've been okay. Other markets are weaker. You know, the traditional ones, too. Washington is struggling and will continue to struggle until the new stadium opens. New England and Dallas are original teams that have faltered a little bit. So actually, it's the new teams, in a lot of cases, the expansion teams that have done better than the original ones. I think there's an appetite out there for soccer and for teams. And, you know, you go to Sacramento, Sacramento is going to be fantastic for MLS. It's a smaller market that appreciates the club there. And we see in some of these smaller, medium-sized markets where the city embraces them, you know, whether it's Orlando, Salt Lake, Columbus. Sacramento would be fantastic. You know, Portland's not a huge city, but they're doing great both on the men's and women's side. So I wouldn't, at this stage of the league, I wouldn't be too concerned about new teams folding.
That was a question from Thomas on how we're growing maybe too fast in Major League Soccer and some markets aren't necessarily ready to uphold.
Well, you saw Chivas really folded.
Yeah.
So Chivas it is possible.
Well, Chivas kind of rebranded as well, right?
You could say it that way just to make it sound better.
Saturday, April 23rd, Game 7 of the 8-game roadie. TFC in Montreal, the scene of their brutal playoff loss, their first ever playoff game, ending in a 3-0 loss. This was their chance at revenge, and boy, did they get it.
TFC faithful, who will be enjoying this trip to Montreal much more than their last one, if things stay as they are right now. Osorio. Now it's Will Johnson. This is Sebastian Giovinco. Giovinco with a fine finish, and he might well have wrapped it up for Toronto here in Montreal. 10
6 minutes left to play. It's Sebastian Giovinco with the goal. His sixth of the season.
What a clinical finish from Giovinco.
And that game, two things stood out to me in that game. Altidore still hadn't got a goal at this point in the season. Giovinco scores both here in Montreal. But Altidore won the penalty kick, and he was an absolute monster for Montreal defenders. And we saw that come to fruition again in the playoffs. But even though he wasn't scoring, we talked about it often on the show at that time, just how big an impact Altidore was having.
Yeah, and it was crazy, too, because I was one person that would say, I don't really believe in Josie coming back, because he had kept having the problems with the hamstring, and that's a big problem in football. So the fact that he proved many doubters wrong as the season progressed, this was a defining moment in that.
Yeah, and Altidore may have been TFC's MVP at season's end if you include the playoffs. As for the defense, once again, you get another clean sheet, and this was Didier Drogba's first start of 2016, and Drew Moore kept him in his pocket the entire game.
Had we known then what we know now, Montreal plays better without Didier Drogba.
Exactly.
So
that's something that we learned later in the season. After the game, the captain, Michael Bradley, talking about how much work the coach, Greg Vanney, has put in.
Greg deserves all the credit in the world, I think, in terms of setting the tone, in terms of how hard he works, how thorough he is. The way that he sets the tone inside the team every day, in terms of encouraging guys to take big roles, encouraging guys to put everything they have into it, encouraging guys to have opinions, encouraging guys to really think about what goes on every day, and not just come every day and be along for the ride, but come every day ready to play a big part in things. He's created an environment where every person on the inside, whether it's his staff, whether it's the players, we all feel a part of this. You know, we all feel like we're in something together. And I think, you know, when you talk about this idea and this phrase gets thrown out a lot, but this idea of building something special, then you have to have every person on the inside ready to give everything they have. And he sets the tone in that every day.
Finally, we end the Road Warriors season in review segment of TFC Pitchside. Sunday, May 1st, Providence Park, visiting the defending MLS Cup champions of the Portland Timbers. TFC with another strong performance, but this time they get let down and they lose 2-1.
Valeri is more than capable, even from this sort of range. Valeri! A gift from the soccer gods!
Coming into the weekend, there is no player over the last 3 years that has created more chances than this guy. Clint Irwin, you could set up your wall as perfect as you want it, but it doesn't matter.
Larry scoring a wonder goal to get Portland beyond Toronto FC. So they finished the road trip with three losses, three wins, two draws. The pair of draws and the three wins and the three losses. And you come away from that 11 points in the 8-game road trip. And I think maybe, even though forgetting everything that happened throughout the year, which is hard to do now that it's already happened, but at that point, I think we kind of felt with the way the road trip played out, TFC had found something here.
Yeah, definitely. We're all on a high. Everyone who follows TFC, everyone was on a high, because coming out of a road trip like that, very grueling road trip, to come out with, what, 11 points?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And you're coming home and you're going to have this huge homestand, new stadium. Everything was just in front of them. Everything was coming into fruition almost.
Giovinco was back in scoring. Altidore looked good. And they had set defensively in a way that you felt like
most
it
importantly,
was
defensively
sustainable throughout the entire season. Following that loss in Portland, we had president of the club, Bill Manning, on. And we also had Dwayne DiRosario on the show to talk about the home opener, which was to come, and it would set off really the middle part of the season. The home opener would be against FC Dallas, and that'll be a part of our next season in review show. And again, if you want to check out any of these interviews that we've played clips from today, check out sportsnet.ca/590. Go to our shows page. You'll find everything there. Or just tweet us at Dan Riccio, at UnfitRef, and we'll be happy to send a link through to you on anything that you would like to revisit. But before we leave you, and we'll have the next show up in the new year, Thomas, one thing road trip that stuck out for you?
I'd have to say it was the first game. The fact that they could go to New York Red Bull, get the victory, not only win, but win decisively.
Without Jozy Altidore too, yeah.
Without Jozy Altidore, get the clean sheet, move forward. It was a great way to... We weren't used to that following TFC, for them to play that well against a team that now we know was a very strong team, especially at home.
Yeah, and I think for me it was the Montreal game. I mean, you finally get Jozy Altidore back into the swing of things, and you completely dominate the Montreal Impact in their home barn. Not because it was a revenge the fashion that way that TFC won that game. They were just so comfortable. They were so strong. They were dominating. It showed you the potential that this team had going through the next part of the season. So the next episode will feature the meaty part of the sandwich in this three-part season in review of TFC being the runners-up in MLS Cup. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, producer Emil Delich. Have a happy holidays. This was TFC Pitchside.
You know, overall, it was actually a really good bonding experience for our players. And, you know, we had added some top players and personalities into the squad this year. And, you know, just in a weird way, that just that road trip brought everyone together. And I think, you know, you've seen our identity grow as we're going to be a team that's really difficult to score on. We're going to be well organized, and Greg deserves a lot of credit for that. But there's some grit to this team, too, and they're fighting for each other. So I really think this road trip in a lot of ways came out to be a positive for us, because it was us against the world, and our guys walk away at the end of the day with a 3-3-2 record after 8 games. You know, I'd sign up for that before the season started, so I was certainly really pleased with it.
You know, there's two synonymous celebrations now with this Toronto FC club. It's your celebration and this motorcycle thing that that Jovinko's got going on. I mean, put a grade on it for me. How would you grade Jovinko's new motorcycle celebration?
Well, it's not the shake and bake, so...
It's definitely not the shake and bake.
It's a close second. I'll give it a close second.
How did you come up with the shake and bake, if you don't mind my asking?
Yeah, I mean, the shake and bake is pretty much... I just came up with it just naturally. I didn't really do much planning behind it. It was like a pop lock, kind of slow down, just break it down type of, you know, thing that I just kind of developed over time. But, you know, it really stems from playing with Malvern back in the days, and it was a way for me to give tribute to a lot of the players that I grew up with that didn't make it as far as I did. So I was, you know, carrying that torch for them.
I think it feels like game 9, but there is a new beginning to it in terms of, you know, coming home for the first time. It feels like something we haven't done for a long time, and that's the new feeling, I think, that for me personally that I have is you go through your whole routine now of being at home, which is different than when you're on the road. And so for me, that's a little bit of the difference. But in terms of where the team is, I think we feel like we've had 8 games under our belt the preseason. We've vetted out some things that we needed to do. We've got guys healthy, all those kinds of things that you do over the first 8 games. And I think we're in a good position now to come back home.
It feels like a whole new stadium. Obviously, last year when we got back here, we were excited. The addition certainly made it feel like a nicer stadium. And for me, when you walk out there now, it feels like a brand new stadium. The whole feel and perspective is entirely different. And so it kind of sets in now that we're getting ready to play a game here in a few days, which is something that we've all really been waiting for.
Follow the guys on Twitter @DanRiccio590 and @UnfitRef.